Good morning. I am your host, Gianna. This is Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to explain why these things are happening, so you understand how they will influence you, your family, and your country. Then during the second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching, not law, and by way of His covenant. So those who are interested in coming to know Him, those who would like to enjoy a relationship with Him, those who would like to be saved by Him, will know the way to accomplish each of those things. If you are rational, this will be the most valuable part of today's program. Our number, should you want to ask a question, you want to criticize or affirm something that is said today, or just engage in our conversation, it is 877-300-7645. Over the last 2 days, we have been reviewing an article, actually a pair of articles, written by WorldNet Daily. We're going to continue that theme today because there was a lot to chew on, a lot to learn, a lot to discuss in those articles. We were at our stopping place yesterday. We were considering a Middle East expert. I think it is a woman. Her name is Lopez. She issued a warning for Egypt's Christians. I'd like you to think about what she had to say. She compared the treatment, the upcoming treatment, of the Copts in Egypt to the Jews in Nazi Germany. This is her quote. The Copts must get out of Egypt as soon as possible. For the many millions who will not be able to get out, I expect that things will continue to deteriorate, just as they did for Germany's and Europe's Jews from the 1930s onward, Lopez said. The warnings were there long before the ghettos and roundups and one-way train trips to the concentration camps began in the 1940s, she said. Now, if that statement was made out of ignorance of the situation, political and religious, military, in Egypt, then you would say, you know, wow, even if this person was just your standard talking head on Fox News or some other media outlet, you'd still say, you know, I'd better pause here and at least think about this. Is there any possibility that this is true? But this is coming from a Middle East expert. And please consider this on an expert on Islam. What she said is absolutely true. There are about 10% to 12% of the Egyptian population are Copt. It was their country before the Muslims invaded. It's not a case where they're trying to take over a country that was not their own. It's the Muslims who, right after Muhammad's death, in the first 100 years after Muhammad's death, you know, Muhammad himself led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, conquering and bludgeoning, raping, robbing, enslaving everyone within camel ride of Medina, yesteryear's Yathrib. But immediately after Muhammad's death, the remaining Muslims fought the War of Compulsion. Yes, it's called the War of Compulsion. They forced every Arab in Arabia to make the choice, Islam or die. That is the choice that exists throughout the world of Islam even today. Islam or die. Well, once the new Muslims were fully indoctrinated by Islam, which is a manifesto of terrorism, a declaration of war against all humankind, once they were fully corrupted by Muhammad's religion and they were compelled to participate in it, these first Muslims, over the first 100 years of Islam's creation, were the world's most savage barbarians. More savage than Genghis Khan, Kublai Khan. More savage than the Roman legions. More savage even than the Spartans. They conquered most of Persia. They conquered good portions of India, slaughtering millions as they did. They conquered everything west of the Arabian Peninsula, including today's Syria, taking it from the Byzantine Christians, Israel, Jordan. They also conquered all of northern Africa, which at the time was Christian, and eventually overthrew the Byzantine Empire. That left the Copts in a horrible position, but through the ages, a small remnant of Copts managed to survive. Now, those Copts are at the cusp of losing their lives. That is the reality. Islam is incapable of coexisting. It has always been incapable of coexisting. It is especially incapable of coexisting today. When America invaded Iraq and deplaced a secular government with a religious one managed out of Tehran, the Christian population in Iraq was decimated. Their homes and churches were burned. They were murdered. When America sided with the rebels in Egypt, you put the Copts in exactly the same position. When we knew this was going to happen, when America forced Israel to give up control of Gaza and the West Bank to Fatah and Hamas, the very sizable Christian population, which at the time before America did this, was in the 20 percentile of the population, is now less than one. It's been decimated. This is the case all over the Islamic world. In East Timor, where Indonesian Muslims controlled half of the island, they perpetrated genocide over the Christians on the eastern part of the island. This is the reality. You may not like it. It may sound harsh, but it is the nature of Islam. The Quran tells Muslims to continue to fight with all weaponry and wage war against non-Muslims until the only religion on earth is Islam. To wipe out non-Muslims to the last. And they will do that. And now that a secular government, bad as it may have been, in Egypt has been replaced by the Muslim Brotherhood, Ms. Lopez is right. The Copts, who have lived there much longer than have the Muslims. In fact, the Copts have been there 700 years longer than the Muslims, seven centuries, now need to flee their homes. You know, when the United Nations granted a tiny sliver of land to Israel in 1948, and then prior to that, gave enormous swaths of land to the Muslims in the breakup of the Ottoman Empire. There was a sizable population of Jews living in what is today Iran. They were all expelled. They couldn't take anything with them. Islam is this way. It's never going to change. And if Islam were to reform, it would be even worse than it is, as what we're witnessing today. The Copts are being crucified, literally. They have no rights. And what is happening in terms of this Islamic reformation throughout the world of Islam is making the situation worse. There will be no coexistence for those who are not only Muslims, but even for peaceful Muslims. You would be surprised the number of letters that I received to Prophet of Doom from bad Muslims, peaceful Muslims, bad Muslims by the Quran's definition, good people, who have had to flee their homes and communities in northern Africa that have now been changed from secular governments to Islamic governments, and saying that life has become hellish. It is impossible for them. And so in Egypt, Ms. Lopez is right. The Copts have to leave their homes. For them, it will be as it was for the Jews in the 1930s. And as for the Jews in Israel, for them it will be war. The Muslim Brotherhood has already declared war on Israel. This article goes on to say that author Pamela Geller of Atlas Shrugs, an analyst of the Middle East and Islam, fully agrees, and she cites the Quran. Quote, the Christians are in serious trouble because the Quran in Surah 929 commands Muslims to wage war against them, to subjugate them, which means to both oppress and control them. And they are also identified with the hated West and the U.S., Geller said. I've shared in previous programs considerable insights regarding the ninth surah and the fifth surah of the Quran. Ms. Geller is right, but not completely right. The last two surahs of the Quran that were revealed chronologically are the ninth and the fifth. And that is important because of the laws of abrogation, because there are other statements in the Quran which say there should be no compulsion in religion and speak favorably of Christianity. But those contradictory statements in the Quran, which is enough to prove the Quran false for anybody who is rational, those contradictory statements in the Quran are abrogated by Quran 2106, which tells us that any time that Allah contradicts himself and he brings a verse that is contrary to one he has previously revealed, you are to throw the old one into oblivion and follow the new one. And so the last two surahs of the Quran define Islam. We'll return to this after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths, 877-300-7645. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Should you wish to engage in this conversation, it is 877-300-7645. We were considering what Ms. Geller had said about the that Christians ought to be wary because of what and she quoted Quran 929 and kind of left it at that. There's so much more to it than that. And it's important that you understand how the Quran and how the Hadith, how Muhammad's overall situation are creating the hell on earth that we are witnessing today. And so let me try to put this just in a general perspective. Muhammad had overhunted Jews. He had, there were three Jewish communities in Yathrib. He had decimated all three. The last one, the Qurayza, is the most savage story presented in any religious text anywhere in the world. It is where Muhammad took the men of the Quraysh out and one by one in front of everybody beheaded them in the city square of what is today Medina. He took the women and he played a game of lots so that after he picked the prettiest one for himself to rape, that his goons could rape the rest of the Jewish women who were part of the Quraysh. Then Muhammad enslaved all of the children, sold them off as slaves, and he stole the property of the Jews. After having overhunted Jews then in Yathrib, having destroyed the last of the communities, the first Jewish community that Muhammad attacked in Yathrib were exiled to Kabar, and Muhammad, after his failure at the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, did the same thing to them, killing the men, raping the women, selling the children into slavery, stealing their property. At that point, Muhammad had overhunted Jews. They were now extinct within his reach. And he had what little prosperity there was amongst Arabs in the Arabian Peninsula. He had bludgeoned them to the point that there was nothing more to give, nothing more to take, I should say. And so Muhammad realized that just as Genghis Khan had created this militant culture where people didn't work, they stole. That they found that robbing others was a easier way for them to survive than actually producing something of value. And so when you create that kind of a culture, you have to keep it going. Otherwise, they turn on you. And so Muhammad realized there's only one more community to go after, and that would be the satellite communities of the Byzantine Empire. And so in the ninth surah, what we read is the Muslims who have been so vicious to the Jews and to Arabs telling Muhammad they're not going across the desert to go fight a Byzantine community, to go rob a Byzantine community. They're not going to go do that. Because to do that, for the first time, after 75 skirmishes where they were armed militants going against unarmed civilians, this time it was going to be against a community that was backed by a real army. And they knew they'd get slaughtered. And so Muhammad is having his God call those peaceful Muslims who said, they're not really peaceful, they're the ones who have robbed everybody within camel ride. Yathrib, today's Medina. But he's calling those that don't want to go fight. And by the way, Muhammad himself doesn't want to go on this journey either. He just wants to send out his goons to go rob for him. But those who did not want to fight, the ninth surah labels them hypocrites. And it says of the peaceful Muslims who do not want to kill on Allah's orders that Allah wants good Muslims to kill them so that he himself, Allah, can torture them in hell. That's the ninth surah. The ninth surah also begins by saying that any promise, any treaty, any agreement between a Muslim and a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim. It was the justification for Muhammad dishonoring his agreement with Mecca and conquering it. Then in the fifth surah, because Muhammad had overhunted Jews, there he had caused them to be extinct within his reach, and he had overhunted Arabs. In the fifth surah, Muhammad redefines his enemy. His wannabe God redefines his enemy. And that enemy is no longer the pagans in Arabia. It's no longer the unbelievers in Arabia. It's no longer the Jews who had been the fixation of Muhammad's wrath. No, now the enemy was Christians. And so it's the fifth surah that relabels infidel. And infidel now becomes Christian. That's the purpose of the fifth surah, is to rename Allah's enemies so that they would have new victims to rob and to plunder. That is the problem. This is I Am Yatta. This is Shattering Myths. We will be back after the break. 877-300-7645. Shattering Myths. We were speaking of the conditions that are now pervasive in Egypt as a result of the fundamentalist Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafist being in control of that country. And we were considering author Pamela Geller's comments on Atlas Shrugged, where what she said was accurate, not completely so, but in her defense, she may have been completely accurate, and the writer, the journalist for WorldNet Daily may just not have written down everything that she said. But she pointed to the ninth surah, the 29th verse, which commands Muslims to wage war against Christians and to subjugate them, as the reason that the Christians in Egypt should fear for their lives, that they're in the same position that Jews were in Nazi Germany prior to Hitler coming to power. And incidentally, there is another correlation here that no one wants to mention. And that is that the Quran and Hitler's Mein Kampf, my recital and my struggle, my jihad as it's called in the Islamic world, Mein Kampf means my struggle, and struggle is jihad in Arabic. Those books are extraordinarily similar. Both are anti-Semitic. In fact, the Quran is actually more anti-Semitic than is Hitler's Mein Kampf. In Prophet of Doom, which is my comprehensive presentation of the Islamic scriptures, I devote 77 pages of Prophet of Doom to juxtaposing Hitler's Mein Kampf, statements that he made in Mein Kampf, next to statements that Muhammad made either through his Quran or Hadith. Apart from one race versus another and one religion versus another, the schemes are identical. And so, by reading Mein Kampf, any Jew in Europe would know exactly what's going to happen to them. By reading the Quran and the Hadith, any Jew living in Egypt should know exactly what's going to happen to them, which is the point that Pamela Geller of Atlas Shrugs was making. He's not making this up. It is written in the textbook that is the constitution of their religion and their lives. This is what's going to happen. They've told you what's going to happen. It's going to happen exactly the way they have said. So as we were speaking of this, the combination of the ninth and the fifth surahs of the Quran, the last two handed down, therefore the two surahs which can't be contradicted or abrogated by anything else. The enemy of Islam is redefined as Christians and peaceful Muslims, no longer Jews. And so they will be Islam's prey. The more fundamentalist Islamic a country becomes, as Egypt has become, the more they will do what the Quran orders them to do. She, this is Geller of Atlas Shrugs, continues. These are Islamic hardliners. A better term would be fundamentalists, but hardliner is at least better than radical, Ms. Geller, who will do everything by the Quran. That's not quite true either. Most everything Muslims do is by the Hadith, not by the Quran. They claim that the Quran is their guidebook, but in actuality, both everything that they do, including Sharia law, comes out of the Hadith. Muhammad's example is impossible to follow unless you study the Hadith. The Quran says, and she's going to quote the same verse that was quoted, 533, which is now speaking of what Muslims are to do to Christians. It says, indeed, the penalty for those who wage war against Allah and His Messenger. And by the way, waging war, almost everyone that fought against Islam was in a defensive battle, not in an offensive battle. Even the Crusades were a defensive battle on behalf of Christendom, not offensive. Islam almost always attacks first. That's been the case of the wars that Israel has had to fight. Anyway, it says, indeed, the penalty for those who wage war against Allah and His Messenger, even if it's a defensive battle, even if they're trying to fight off the advance of the Muslims and strive upon the earth to cause mischief, is none other than they be killed or crucified and that their hands and feet be cut off on opposite sides, or that they be exiled from the land, Geller said. By the way, why not just say that's what the Quran says? Well, what's with the journalist? Geller says, nah, that's what the Quran says. She was quoting the Quran. International Christian Concerns Middle East Analysis, Aydin Clay, believes there is a relationship between the recent attacks on the regime's enemies, a recent Sinai military skirmish, which we reported in detail on this program, and Morsi's move against the high-ranking generals. The Sinai skirmish involves suspected Hamas guerrillas trying to cross into Gaza from Egypt. The Israeli Defense Force and intelligence learned of the attempted crossing in advance and stopped the incursion. 16 Egyptian border guards were killed in the attempted Rafah border crossing incident. Quote, it is hard to believe that President Morsi could have dismissed Field Marshal Mohamed Tantawi, without the help of lower-ranking military officers. The military sense of prestige, which millions of Egyptians take great pride in, took a battering following the militant attack in Sinai that killed 16 soldiers. The military should have been prepared for that attack. Israel was. They were not. And the blame has largely been placed on Tantawi for his negligence and embarrassing the military establishment, he said. No. That's not what's happening here. That is not what's happening here. Morsi did get the support of lower-ranking generals because in a country like Egypt, the highest-ranking generals, like even the Mubarak regime, are secularists. They only pretend to be Islamic to control Muslims. But the rank and file, that's not the case. Most of the mid-ranking generals are fundamentalist Muslims. They're members of the Muslim Brotherhood. And so fundamentalist Muslims came together, and they saw this as an opportunity to control Egypt, to make Egypt an Islamic theocracy. And that is what's happened here. In terms of embarrassment, the embarrassing part of this incident that happened in the Sinai is that Hamas, who is an agency of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is every bit as much an agency of the Islamic Brotherhood as is Hezbollah, an agency of Iran's ruling mullahs. And it was Hamas that killed the military. So you've got fundamentalist Muslims killing secular military soldiers. That's the embarrassing part of this. And then when those same Hamas troops tried then to kill Jews, Israel was aware of what they were going to do and stopped them. This was an enormously insightful window into what's happening in Egypt. Lopez says that Israel's preparedness is a slap against the Egyptian army. The Egyptians aren't thinking of it that way. As a matter of fact, all of the news clips from Egypt that came out at that time, women crying over the death of Egyptian soldiers and saying to Hamas, why did you kill Egyptian soldiers? Why didn't you go and kill Jews? It's your job to go kill Jews, not Egyptian soldiers. It wasn't the fact that the Egyptian military was ill-prepared that caused the rank and file amongst Muslims in Egypt to be frustrated. It's that from the average Muslim in Egypt's perspective, Hamas ought to be terrorizing Jews, not killing Muslims in the Egyptian army. This is Lopez, a quote from her. She said, that border skirmish and the resulted deaths of the Egyptian border guards was known ahead of time by Israeli intelligence, which warned their Egyptian military counterparts. She notes that Israeli intelligence avoided contact with the Muslim Brotherhood in the incident because the attacks were a Hamas plot. Hamas is controlled. It was created by the Muslim Brotherhood. It is funded by the Muslim Brotherhood. It is directed by the Muslim Brotherhood. It is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's now Hamas is as tied to Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood as the Taliban is to Pakistan. Lopez added that after notification, the Egyptian army did not act. Yeah. They were in a horrible position. Egypt is now controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood. So what is the Egyptian army going to do? If the Egyptian army proactively went out to attack and kill Hamas, then the people in Egypt who've already voted 70% in favor of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafist parties are going to demand that every general resign. because they were off killing Hamas, which is their stick to poke at Israel, who they once destroyed. There's nothing they could have done. There was no winning in that case. It was only losing. She added that Morsi wasted no time in responding to the crisis. Morsi jumped on the incident as a perfect reason to purge the top ranks of the Egyptian military, install his own Muslim Brotherhood sympathizers in positions across the top. The chief of staff, the intel chief, she said. Some call it an eternal coup d'etat, and I agree. But put Morsi in sole control of the legislative branch. There is no legislative branch in Egypt. There is none. It was wiped out by the court. There is now only a dictator in Egypt. Only a dictator. The Supreme Court wiped out their legislative branch. The parliament was dissolved. Now all there is Mohamed Morsi, a Muslim Brotherhood dictator. The new defense minister is a Muslim Brotherhood sympathizer. As I said, the lower-ranking generals were all members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Things are moving very fast, out of control, towards fundamentalist Islam. We are moving, my friends, to World War III, to the Magog War, to a war that will wipe out half of the population of this planet. I am Yada. This is Shattering This. We'll be back after the break. 877-300-7645. To the final segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. We still have a full hour to go where we're going to speak of something a great deal more uplifting. Geller, who is the responsible for Atlas Shrugs, went on to share some additional insights. She said that she believes that Morsi had a second motive for his action, whereby he replaced some of the generals who were less indoctrinated by the Muslim Brotherhood by those who were full members in good standing with the Muslim Brotherhood. Quote, I suspect that Morsi's action was timed in part to forestall any further military action against the jihadis. You see, this is really an interesting situation. The Egyptian army was put in a position where it had foreknowledge that Hamas was going to attack. And if they had responded proactively to attack Hamas and killed Hamas, they would have been ravaged by the Egyptian people, who would have risen up against them in anger, because the Egyptian people have been indoctrinated to believe that Hamas is the sharp end of the stick poking at Israel. And so if they had responded that way, they would have been absolutely annihilated by the Jewish Muslim population in Egypt. But because they didn't respond proactively and attack the jihadists and allowed some 20 of their soldiers, a little less than that, to die, now they were in a position of what do we do? Now, their natural instinct would be to avenge the deaths of those by attacking Hamas, but the Hamas members that actually attacked and killed the German military border crossing guards were already killed by the Israelis. And so you couldn't even go after the actual perpetrators, but Morsi, who is a huge proponent of Hamas, didn't want the military seeking revenge against Hamas. And so he was in a perfect position to replace the top brass with Muslim Brotherhood sympathizers who, rather than attacking Hamas, would thank Hamas for doing this. In other words, truth be known, Mohamed Morsi is the one who, in his meeting with Hamas a week before this incident occurred, told Hamas to do this very thing. Had Hamas leaked the information on the attack against the Rafah border crossing to Israel so that Israel was prepared to respond, and that the Egyptian military was put in a lose-lose scenario. No matter what they did, Morsi would be in a position to usurp their power. It is precisely what happened here. It's obvious. So Morsi is instituting a reign of terror to consolidate his power, Geller said. Good for her. She figured it out. In fact, everything we read here from Geller of Atlas Shrugs indicates she figured it out. Well, she doesn't say it quite this directly. By this quote, Morsi is instituting a reign of terror to consolidate his power, it's obvious she came to the same conclusion we just have, that Mohamed Morsi specifically orchestrated during his meeting 2 weeks ago with Hamas this attack on the Egyptian military with the full foreknowledge of the Egyptian military and the Israelis to create the exact result that it did, putting the Egyptian military in a position that no matter how they responded, Morsi was in the position to oppose a dictatorship through terror. American Enterprise Institute Middle East analyst Michael Rubin agreed. He said that Morsi is after the power. He didn't figure it out. He just said, of course, a politician. That's all they're interested in, is the power. Morsi certainly wants absolute control. There's a reason that Morsi's not pushing for a reinstatement of the parliament. After all, his Muslim Brotherhood dominates the parliament. There's no reason for a no stinking parliament. Not when a dictatorship is so much more efficient. The Egyptian army have never been saints, but Morsi will broker no checks to his power as the Muslim Brotherhood writes the constitution, imposes its dream of an Islamic state on Egypt. Lopez says that this all means that Morsi is shedding his moderate veneer. He was never a moderate. He was a leader in the Muslim Brotherhood. The point I would make is that Morsi is not bothering to play the moderate card anymore. He is trying to consolidate power for the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the end of our news segment today. We have more stories tomorrow that all will shed light on what the world is becoming and what we can do about it. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy.